Hey, it's John Canzano. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe. And thanks to all the listeners and all of our sponsors who help make the Bald-Faced Truth the number one sports radio show in Portland. Enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. John Canzano.
People don't like to hear the truth all the time. You know, people ask you questions, but they don't actually necessarily want to hear the answers.
Love it.
I mean, I like the guy. I listen to him every day.
Canzano, what's going on, man?
He's dead sexy.
I think he does a damn good job.
I'm going to be rooting for this young Portland team, which, you know, is a terrific team. You guys just have a terrific nucleus.
You pay attention to detail. That's why you're so successful.
I just think he's honest. Straightforward and to the point.
You're bringing up something that's probably the average sports fan watching the game didn't pick up on.
I'm really glad to see that someone who speaks their mind is not afraid to tell it how it is.
He's a smart guy. Just my dude, man. Yeah, I know him, man.
I let my mother listen to him.
Hate him.
You don't want to give nobody a second chance.
Trump. To represent that as some sort of subterfuge like John Canzano, I would have expected far better.
You just sounds like an egotistical idiot.
He was rude, crude, and wrong.
Love to hate
him. Yo, John, I can't stand you. I can't stand you, but I come back every day to listen to the show.
Bald-faced truth teller.
Who is he to judge?
Well, he can raise your eyebrows a lot.
I was angry. He just got my feathers that day big time.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
A.J. Harrison at the plate is grounded into a double play, struck out and walked. Newman delivers. K.J., a drive toward the alley in left center field. This one, it's on its way. So long! A grand slam homer for K.J. Harrison! A grand slam in Omaha for K.J. And the Beavers lead it 8-0. I don't know if you listened or watched the broadcast on ESPN last night with the Ducks. Excuse me, not the Ducks. The Beavers in Omaha. Beaver fans are really going to be mad now. I don't know if you watched it. What did you think of the broadcast? I was in the stadium in Omaha, TD Ameritrade Park, and there was a lot of LSU in that park, and LSU got its teeth kicked in. And I love seeing a Pac-12 team just beat the snot out of an SEC team. But you tell me, in watching that game on television, if you watched it, did it bother you that the broadcast team was pro-SEC? The Southeastern Conference gets a lot of attention. They win a lot of championships. They've been very good. LSU has 6 national titles in baseball, 18 appearances in the College World Series. But Oregon State is clearly the class of that tournament. And the only team I think that can get in their way might be Louisville, but because Louisville has a dominant pitcher. But Oregon State looking very good last night. I was there at TD Ameritrade Park in Omaha. I was there to watch that game, write about it, and I'm back in Portland today. I want your phone calls on those of you who witnessed it, watched it. Did it bother you? And why do you think the Southeastern Conference gets so much attention? I didn't really notice it because in the press box, you're not hearing the play-by-play. But I've got a lot of friends who listened to that game, watched that game, were paying attention to it, had it on in the background, and went, man, that was a pro-SEC broadcast crew. Man, did they really want LSU to win that game? It was all about LSU. Well, the scoreboard was all Oregon State, 13-1, and Oregon State does that to teams. We'll take your phone calls. 503-417-7575 is the number. I want you to weigh in and tell me what you thought of that and why it is that you think, even if you didn't see it, why do you think that that bias exists? What is it about SEC and the Southeastern Conference? And we always talk about East Coast bias, but isn't it really, when it comes to college athletics, a bias of the SEC and the southern part of the country? I get it. They're good in football. I get that Alabama wins national titles and LSU's right there and Auburn has been very good in spots over the years. And we have watched the Southeastern Conference dominate college football. But is this a product of ESPN? Is it a chicken and an egg thing? I mean, do they talk so much about the SEC in other sports as well because they win in football? Or is there something else going on there? I got to give credit to Oregon State baseball. They are an absolute machine. And if you're not watching this, you're missing out. 3 days off now until Friday when they come back with a chance to beat another opponent in this College World Series. I expect it's going to be LSU in a rematch. But they get another opportunity to come back and make the College World Series final. They are locked in. They are deep. They are good. I called them Casey Bots on Oregon Live and in the Oregonian today. And I mean that as a compliment. Like, they have taken on the persona of Pat Casey, the baseball coach there. And I had people in the press box in Omaha, other writers from around the country and in Omaha, who said, hey, a distraction like Oregon State has had over the last couple weeks would have derailed any other team. But this team is locked in. Good kids, locked in, talented, deep, 1-9 in the lineup, and probably a couple guys on the bench could play for anybody in the country. And Pat Casey and Pat Bailey, the two primary coaches there at Oregon State, just completely have this team relaxed. They're going to the zoo today. They're also going to Boys Town in Omaha. But I'll give you more of that. I want to take your phone calls. I want to know what you think the Southeastern Conference bias is about. 503-417-7575 is the number. Dave's in Longview. Dave, what's on your mind?
Hey, John. I have solved the issue.
Yes.
I watch ESPN, but I listen to Mike Parker, and it solves all the problems.
Mike Parker fires up, man. And I saw a really cool thing, Dave. Mike Parker on Father's Day had his daughter Lydia there. She's there traveling with the team. She's a huge Beavers fan. She's a student, I believe, at Oregon State, or maybe just graduated. But she was there, and just the other day on Sunday, they're having a practice. So the Oregon State baseball team is headed to Boys Town, where they're going to practice on this little dinky diamond. And it's a nice baseball diamond, but it's little and dinky by college baseball standards, like certainly major college baseball standards. So there's like aluminum bleachers. The grass is long. It's not manicured. There's one groundskeeper whose job it is to take care of the entire facility. And he's like, you know, we're not ready for this. And it's not like people are out there like dragging the infield before they practice or anything like that. It really was Spartan. And beyond the outfield fences are soybean plants. So I showed up there to watch them practice, and it was cool to see those guys in that element, kind of away from the College World Series. A chance for them to practice, not be distracted. The wind was blowing and the sun was shining, and a couple of Beavers fans had showed up and they sat in the stands. But Mike Parker's daughter, Lydia, brought baseball gloves for her and her dad. And when the Beavers finished practicing, out in the outfield, here was the Beavers broadcaster, Mike Parker, having a catch with Lydia. It was like right out of Field of Dreams. Like, Dad, do you want to have a catch? I mean, it was like a Father's Day wish come true. And everybody kind of stopped to watch that a little bit and go like, wow, isn't that a cool thing? And, it, you know, and frankly, for me, I was away from home on Father's Day, but I thought a lot about my own dad. And I thought about, you know, that those kinds of moments that you have with your dad growing up, where you are literally having a catch and it's a simple thing. It's almost like having a conversation. Parker's very good. He's very ingrained with this team. And he loves Oregon State. You know that because of moments like this.
Tyler Smith has an RBI single in the game. And he's hit by the first pitch and just simply runs down to first. Oregon is going to ask, did he offer on the bunt attempt? And he certainly didn't.
Oh, I think they're going to
say he did. And Pat Casey, here comes Casey.
Now they say they called a strike. The first at base umpire called a strike, I believe.
That is a terrible call, folks. That is a horrendous call. They are saying that Pat Casey offered, and he's been ejected. Are you kidding me?
I believe that Pat Casey has already been ejected. Whatever he said to home plate umpire, he said it fast.
That is a horrendous call. Absolutely horrendous. And Pat Casey is all over the first base umpire, Scott Letendre. Tyler Smith was turning to bunt and got drilled by the pitch. His bat never went across the plate. And Scott Letendre calls a strike and throws Pat Casey out of the game. And Casey's all over the home plate umpire, Brent Cunningham. And I don't blame him either. He doesn't need any help on that call. That's a hit batsman, Jimmy. That's a terrible call.
Mike Parker, several years ago, going bananas in the broadcast booth. And I give him a hard time about that, but I love that call because it tells you how much he cares about him. And there are journalists And maybe, you know, you can tell me, like, when you listen to a broadcaster, if you're a Duck fan, when you hear Jerry Allen, who's going bananas, or you hear Jerry Allen, his voice is cracking as he says, you know, the Ducks are going to the Rose Bowl. Or if you hear Mike Parker, who's just so, you can tell he's in it with you. Do you like that versus maybe, you know, the broadcaster who tries to, so hard to stay above it all? For me, you know, I am objective. I am, as a sports columnist, covering all these things. I didn't attend either school, but I see a good moment, and I know a good moment when I see one. But I'm not emotional like Jerry Allen and Mike Parker.
To you, thank you is not big enough.
Hard to say goodbye. But we'll do it. Final score, Oklahoma 80. Glad I wasn't in that locker room now. I wouldn't have made it. Thanks for the season. Bye-bye. God bless everybody.
Jerry Allen signing off after the Elite Eight a couple years ago. And the Ducks in the NCAA tournament lost to Buddy Hield in Oklahoma. And Jerry Allen, you know, couldn't get, he didn't even tell us what the final score was. Would you rather have that broadcaster in it with you as a quote-unquote homer? And let's not use that as a bad thing. Jerry Allen's a homer. Mike Parker's a homer. I know this because Mike Parker's hanging out with the Beavers baseball coaches, and he's hanging, slapping backs. And look, he's almost a fan. And Jerry Allen's the same way. I mean, you heard the emotion in his voice. He's not sad because, hey, the broadcast is over. He's sad because the Ducks lost, and he was thinking, I'm going to get to call that they're going to the Final Four. He got to do that, ultimately, after a year later. But would you rather have a broadcaster who's a homer and is blatant about it, or do you like objectivity? And it brings me to the Blazers situation, too. Because we've gone from a broadcast crew with the Blazers on television with Mike Barrett and also Mike Rice to a very sterile, more objective Kevin Calabro and Lamar Hurd. And I get a lot of people complaining to me because, not because they thought like Mike Rice was a great analyst, but because they knew Mike Rice would get a technical foul arguing with the officials, that Mike Rice was in it with him. Like, you know, he was somebody's uncle or somebody's grandpa who was arguing with him. What kind of broadcast team do you want on your sporting event? 503-417-7575. You can also tweet at me, at John Canzano, BFT. Matt tweets that two pitches last night in Omaha, and the Beavers had a runner in scoring position. I thought a lot about that first inning. And I thought about, you know, Stephen Kwan, who led off that game with a bunt. I just don't know how LSU didn't see that coming. And everybody says, well, Oregon State does that to teams. They put pressure on you because you know you can't make a mistake, therefore you make a mistake. But the bottom line last night was I watched Stephen Kwan at practice. I've watched him play games all year. This is what he does. He bunts. I just don't know how LSU wasn't ready for it. So I'm not putting that all on like it was an ambush. I just think Oregon State was the smarter, better team, and they put such pressure on you. They just do not make mistakes. They don't do the pitcher any favors. And at the end of the game, they don't give you any outs. And LSU was much more generous to Oregon State last night. And I just don't see any way that Oregon State trips and falls here until they get to the final series of the College World Series. Tim's in Tualatin. Tim, what's up, man?
Hey, John, a few random thoughts for you. I'll start by saying, in the interest of full disclosure, that I'm a Duck. But it is interesting that Mike Parker is also a Duck.
Yeah.
Of course, you wouldn't know that now, but yeah, it's kind of interesting. As far as like the Blazer broadcasters, I still feel bad for Mike, but for Mike Barrett, but Mike Rice needed to go, man. I'm sorry. I did not shed a tear when he left. He just wasn't very good, frankly, in my opinion.
Yeah, he polarized people more than Barrett did. I think everybody liked Barrett. I think Mike Rice, some people loved him. Some people went, oh, gosh, he's always kind of, you know, can't get the names right. He's always kind of, he's like somebody's grandpa. But right. I think together, it was the fun thing for me was to watch Barrett have to babysit Rice on the broadcast. You know, he was having to hold his hand a little bit.
You know what? I think it's a strong possibility that I don't want to sound like I'm breaking news here because I don't have any inside information in particular, but I think there's a chance that Barrett could end up with Ducks someday. I don't think that Jerry Allen is going to do this forever. And anyway,
I don't know. I mean, sometimes I think Mike Barrett has more to offer the world than being simply a broadcaster. And I've talked to him just a couple of times, communicated with him a couple of times since he left broadcasting for the Blazers. He's got ample opportunities to come back. He could come back on this radio. I've offered him, hey, when I'm out, you want to guest host for me? He's got other things going on. And so I give him credit for that. I know, too, that he's had a couple of broadcast opportunities like with entities like the Pac-12 and others. So I won't be surprised if he comes back. I also won't be surprised if Mike Barrett says, you know what? I don't need it. I like being home with my kids. Charlie's in Vancouver. Charlie, what's up, man?
John, in regards to the bees, at 3 o'clock yesterday, I turned my radio dial to the left and ran into Parker. And that was awesome listening to that. I wish I would have heard ESPN. If you figure out a way for us to somehow listen to that or find a podcast or something, could you let us know? Because that would be really interesting to listen to. And then, man, as far as emotional announcers, I'd be a hypocrite if I said can't have them because I'm a I get teased as a coach, and you know, I don't like that the guy took a shot at Rice took a shot at Parker and said he's a duck and like he can't root for the Beavers. It almost sounded like that. Whatever you're involved with, if you're an emotional, passionate coach, announcer, whatever you are, that's what you are, and to change that would not be being real. Yeah, that's just how I feel on it. Yeah. And I do really enjoy the Rice and Barrett and miss them and just felt that Colangelo, and I think that was Earth, yeah, whatever stars, were just really, really pale. I mean, like they couldn't have cared however the game went. I get not being a homer, but it'd be nice to feel like you actually cared that you were at the game and weren't just signing a paycheck. That's what it sounded like listening to.
I felt like they were disconnected as a team, and it might just be that Kevin Calabro's got no tie really to the Portland market or the Blazers. He's a Seattle guy. And I think a lot of people, as we have learned here at this radio station, there are a lot of people who would prefer to leave Seattle in Seattle. Dave's in Northeast. Dave, go ahead.
Hey, thanks, John, for taking my call. You know, I've been giving this a little bit of thought since you brought it up, and I grew up listening to Chick Hearn and Vin Scully and you know, Enberg. I think in college sports, I really like the homer aspect. So I'm a Duck fan, and I like Jerry Allen a lot. If I were a Beaver fan, I'd be all over Parker. And what I really admire is passion for the game. And if an announcer shows that, and if it kind of rolls into homerism, so be it. I think maybe in professional sports, I'm fine with a little bit of homer as long as they're calling their team out when they make mistakes,
that is a big peeve, Dave. When I see a broadcast team that won't point out the obvious about what they're doing wrong, it kills me. Leave it right here.
This is the Bald-Faced Truth.
With a different kind of broadcaster. I was in the Bay Area. It was Hank Greenwald. It was Ron Fairley. Hank Greenwald in 1989. The Giants beat the Cubs. They won the pennant. That was the play-by-play call that I liked. I grew up on.
Maldonado with a lead from third. Butler off second. Thompson from first on the pitch. And Clark hits it up the middle and it's center field. Base hit. Maldonado scores. Here comes Butler. On his way to third is Thompson. The Giants lead 3-1. And Superman has done it again. Webster at second. Walton at first. Bedrosian throws to Sandberg and the pitch is grounded to second base. Thompson has it. Throws to first. It's over. 27 years of waiting.
There it was. was, 1989. Tears in my eyes, I'm telling you. So tell me, who does that for you? Who's your broadcaster, as long as we're on the subject? Coming up, we'll talk with Tyler Dorsey, former Duck basketball player, who's on to a possible NBA draft this week, and Jordan Bell, former Duck basketball player. I also want to talk about the column that I had on Oregon Live yesterday in the Oregonian about the Trailblazers. I see, I'm hard on Neil Olshey because I think he's made mistakes. And I think he really panicked last summer when he realized he wasn't getting any free agents. He started just compiling contracts and stockpiling bad contracts. And I get what he was doing. The strategy was, hey, if we don't have free agency available to us, we can only use draft and trade. So we need to stack up some contracts so I have some assets to deal with if I want to make deals at the deadline. In theory, it worked, except that you've got $145 million committed to Alan Crabb and to Evan Turner, another $41 million to Myers Leonard, $15 million to Festus Ezeli. And guess what? You got a bunch of guys that can't play for the money that you're paying them, and nobody wants that. This summer, it really becomes incentivized for the Blazers to not only move some of that money, but also I think they have to look at, if they're going to grab anything, they need draft picks. They need draft picks, future draft picks, not just for this draft, for the next draft, 5 years from now, 3 years from now, whenever. Because it is clear with Paul George coming out and saying, hey, I want to go to the Lakers. I will not re-sign after 2018 with Indiana. It is clear, clearer than ever, that Portland's not going to be a player in free agency for the foreseeable future. And that leaves only the draft and trade available to Neil Olshey in the front office or whoever the GM is. So, yes, if you are a Blazer fan, you tell me, of those guys on the roster, who is it that you need to live without the most? I'll give you mine. Obviously, it's going to be a contract that doesn't make sense for me. But for you, is there a player or two who just don't work with where the direction of this franchise is headed? In a bigger picture thing, what should Adam Silver, the NBA commissioner, be doing to give a place like Portland a little bit of hope? Like, all you want is a dog is a bone, right? Like, throw us a bone, Adam Silver, because you've got a league that is set up that puts Portland at such a disadvantage. And that's where I stop banging on Neil Olshey, and I say he can only do so much because I think he's made some mistakes. He's got to get out from under his own mistakes now this summer. But I also think he's playing a game that is stacked against him in a league that has got so many problems that it doesn't want to deal with. And Adam Silver comes out, you know, summer league last summer. He says super teams are bad for the game. And he comes out this year, just a few weeks ago. He says, you know, no, that's not the problem. The problem is we need to make more super teams. And meanwhile, I'm looking over at the NFL. And if I'm going to criticize the NFL, the criticism would be there aren't any great teams. There aren't any perfect teams. Everybody's got flaws. Even the New England Patriots had flaws. The Atlanta Falcons had flaws. Nobody's built like the NBA champions are built these days. And guess what? It gives us a league where a team can lose six games in the regular season or four games or three games, and nobody's hardly ever going undefeated or has a chance to. And then at the end of it, we've got all this parity, and 20 of the last 21 seasons, guess what? In 20 of the last 21 seasons, there have been five or more new teams in the playoffs. It's ridiculous. And it's great. In the NBA, you should be envious, and you should be figuring out how you can fix that. Let's go out to Dylan in Eugene. Dylan, welcome to the show. You on, Dylan? Not there. Mike's in Beaverton. Mike, welcome to the show. Mike, go ahead.
Yeah. I want to go back to the announcers.
Yeah.
Okay. When announcers are calling college sports, they actually announce the game. But when ESPN is on your local ESPN network, the cameras are always on the announcers, and you're always hearing about their family problems, and they talk about this and that. They don't talk about anything about the game. unless there's a big play. And then they go to the play and go, we need to replay that play so we can see it. But these guys get paid for that?
Yeah, I think they're just trying to keep you entertained, Mike. If you're not, you know, a lot of people, when they go to the game, it's the same thing as the ballpark or the stadium. I'll tell you what struck me in Omaha, and again, I just flew in this morning, but what struck me in Omaha in watching those college baseball games was the simplicity of the presentation. Okay, think about this. You go to a NBA game, NFL game, even a major league game. They're doing a promotion. They're doing a giveaway. They've got people singing between the innings. They've got people, you know, shooting T-shirts at you at the NBA games. There's always music that's piped in. In Omaha, it was baseball music and organ, and then it was silent. And I thought to myself, gosh, this is nice. I'm at a sporting event where, yeah, you're paying $7 for a beer or $12 for a hot dog, but I'm at a sporting event where it feels like it's family friendly, and it also feels like the game itself is enough. And I don't totally agree with Mike's call, because I do think that some of the broadcasters do a nice job painting a picture. You know, one of the ESPN broadcasters on the early game yesterday, I was watching the Cal State Fullerton Florida State game, and he told a great story about how Dick Houser got the job with the New York Yankees and left Florida State's dugout to go take the Yankees job after Billy Martin got in an argument with a guy who was a salesman in a bar. So, you know, how random it was that Dick Houser left college baseball to go to the Yankees and then never looked back, of course, getting to the World Series with the Royals and managing the Yankees. But he told a great story. And baseball does lend itself to that kind of storytelling. And it's Vin Scully, it's Harry Carey, it's that lull between pitches that, come on, let's be real, sometimes it's golden.
I don't know what the big deal about Cracker Jack is. Did you ever go and buy a pack of Cracker Jack thinking you'd get a prize and find no prize in the box? Here's a pitch. That might not sound important to some people, but when you're a little kid, especially from humble origin, and they cheat you out of a prize... There's a bouncing ball. Second baseman has the Barbary over to first. It's hard to think in laudatory terms of the product.
I think if there was an occasional box of Cracker Jacks that found no prizes for the little Harry Carey many years ago.
You got that right. And boy, when a box of Cracker Jack to me meant a lot of money. Here's a pitch, bounce foul. That's the most asinine marketing I've ever heard of. One ball, one strike. These guys say, well, you sing about Cracker Jack. I said that I only sing it because it's in the song. Here's a pitch, foul back. And I wouldn't be a bit surprised. Even to this day, some youngsters who buy a box of Cracker Jack don't find a prize in the box. One ball, two strikes, two out. Well, if you're going to talk about our congressman being crooked, here's a pitch foul out of play. Why not talk about commercial products that don't do what they represent to do?
What's your pet peeve when it comes to broadcasting? Because the caller who called in said that he didn't like when they're talking about everything but the game. I like when Harry Carey's doing that, or when Vin Scully's telling a story. I think there's part of that that is charming, that it becomes about the pace of the game in baseball. And I think baseball certainly lends itself to that more than other sports. 503-417-7575 is the number. We're going to talk a lot of draft on today's show with Tyler Dorsey and Jordan Bell, both in front of us on the program. Also, I'm going to give you the Blazers' way out of this mess. It's not just incumbent upon Adam Silver and the league to come in and go, look, we're going to do some things that fix the NBA. We're going to tilt the table back towards small market teams. There's also a franchise here that's got to figure it out. And the Blazers, and I mentioned those three avenues that the Blazers say that they have available to them, nonsense on the free agency. Because Neil Olshay will say, hey, look, we've got free agency, the draft, and trade. That's what's available. No, that's what's available to everybody else. You have the draft, and you have trade. And he did a nice job getting Yusuf Nurkic last year via trade. Credit where it's due. He's an interesting player, and they used a player that was not part of the future to make that happen. So I like that deal. That's the kind of deal that the Blazers need to be involved in. Get upside. Get an interesting player for a player that, you know, is a flatline for us. And Mason Plumlee certainly was a flatline. But also, look at the draft. The Blazers will talk about the draft. And maybe you get excited about draft day. Maybe you're excited about Thursday coming up. But I look at the draft picks that the Blazers have made and the moves that they have made in the last several years. And C.J. McCollum in 2013 was the last player that they got in a draft that has mattered for them. Think about that. You have an organization that has no ability to draw a free agent, that has also failed in the draft more often than it's succeeded in the last decade. Damian Lillard was a good pick. C.J. McCollum was a good pick. But in and around there, it was Martell Webster over Chris Paul. It was Greg Oden over Kevin Durant. And it was a lot of nothing, a lot of pocket lint in the last couple years, which is why I think the Blazers have ended up where they've ended up. Yes, Lillard and McCollum, nice players, nice NBA players. You can win some games with guys like that. But you need to get him some help. And that's what hasn't happened in Portland. And now you've got this contract of Evan Turner. You've got a contract with Alan Crabb. You owe Alan Crabb $55 million. And I think Alan Crabb is the guy that you can get rid of in this offseason that could help you for the future. Everybody wants to talk about now, but really it becomes for the Blazers about a slow climb back to legitimacy. And that's got to come with a win-now trade partner. Somebody like Brooklyn that says, hey, we're trying to win right now. That has cap room, and obviously Brooklyn does, $30 million worth. They also had interest in Alan Crabb last summer. So is that an easy way out of the Alan Crabb contract for Neil Olshay? And is it a deal that Portland would make? Can you get a draft pick? Can you get a future first there? Can you get a rookie contract in that? And again, because they have cap room, that's a willing trade partner. That's a trade partner the Blazers could use. I think Alan Crabb's contract is bad. I think Evan Turner's contract is bad. Myers Leonard at $41 million makes no sense in the world either. The problem with Turner and Leonard is that I just don't know of other teams at their number, the number that they're making. I don't know if other teams are going to find it palatable. 503-417-7575. You tell me what you're looking for this week from your Trailblazers. And of the guys that are the Oregon Ducks players, we're going to hear from Jordan Bell and Tyler Dorsey on today's show. Dylan Brooks was on in Portland today on 102.9 and 750 The Game with Justin Myers and Devon Pouncey. Of those three guys, we all know Jordan Bell is the guy with the most upside. He's the guy everybody's thinking, hey, if there's going to be a first-round pick among the trio, maybe it's Bell. But is that a player, if you're a Blazer fan, that you can get excited about? Because I've been selling the notion that what you need to complement Damian Lillard, C.J. McCollum, and maybe Yusuf Nurkic, if he's part of the future, what you need to complement those guys with, you need players who can play defense. You need players who are long. You need rebounders. You need physicality. You don't necessarily need guys who are going to need the ball in their hands to score. And what I mean by that is you're not running plays for them. But a guy like Jordan Bell, every time a shot goes up on the offensive end of the floor, that's a play that's being run for him. I mean, there's an offensive rebounder in Jordan Bell. And he's going to come on the show at 2 o'clock today. And he's probably going to make the case, if his agent is smart, that he, because Oregon had so many good players around him, that he really didn't get a chance to shine offensively this last season. And if Jordan Bell can develop any kind of little NBA offensive game, if he takes a step forward at all, I do think he's a player who's really interesting to me at like 26 in the draft. If you can get him late in the first and you're the Blazers, I'm not going to sit back and go, look, they already got a bunch of guys who can't shoot. because he's not a shooter. But I'm going to look at him. He's a motor guy. He's an energy guy. I love how much he cares. I think you have to value those things in Jordan Bell. Do you not? And I'm not even saying this from a standpoint of, look, hey, he's going to be loved by Blazer fans. You Blazer fans, you love whoever they draft. That's what you do. You're sucked in because you're in a relationship with this team. Whoever they bring home for dinner, you're like, oh, they're great. That's what you do. I'm not criticizing you. It's just who you are. You got to recognize that. But Jordan Bell, I could buy him as a Blazer. I don't really see Tyler Dorsey or Dylan Brooks being players who can help the Blazers right now. But you tell me, 503-417-7575, what do you want out of this week as a Blazer fan? Trey's in Portland. Trey, what's up, man?
Not too much, Jay. You know, not a Blazer fan. I'm not a Blazer fan. I'm a Warrior man. Been one for a long time. But I have to say, Melo, it's going to sound crazy, Melo will look great in a Blazer uniform. And the reason why I say that, I agree with you. They need another defensive. They need a defensive stopper, not another one. They need somebody to stop somebody on defense. But they also, Melo thrives when he doesn't have the ball all the time. He's one of the, think about him in the Olympics, man. Think about him in those type of events. Melo is great. He's great because he doesn't have to do a lot. You put him back on his team, the Knicks, he has to have the ball too much. He's dribbling. It's all ISO stuff. Get him with the Blazers. Just get open, man, and shoot. Plain and simple. You get a stopper, Blazers are in contention. I'm not saying they're going to win, but they'll make the playoffs with Melo.
Hey, Dre, let me ask you something, because I grew up a Warrior fan, too. I have a hard time rooting for them now that they're a super team, because I was never used to that. We were always beat down. We were always that team with...
Always.
So it doesn't fit me. I don't like how it feels. Could you root for them?
Of course. Jay, of course, but I got to tell a quick story. I'll never forget. This was, I can't even remember the year. Do you remember Chris Washburn?
Yeah.
The Warriors drafted him. I was a kid at the bus stop catching the 51 on Telegraph, and Chris Washburn was in front of the in West Oakland. He was in front of the Mercedes dealership, and we sat there and had a conversation. I will never forget that. And I'm thinking to myself, they drafted the wrong dude. And I'm a kid, but I'm listening to this guy, and I'm like, you're about to play in the NBA?
Yeah, that was 1986. I remember
that
when
I was 14 then. It was a strange moment, man. But if the Blazers are able to get somebody like Melo, I really believe Melo, he's an underrated player if he plays with other guys that can have the ball. He's a better player with guys that can control the tempo, guys like McCollum, guys like Lillard. He's a better player because it's more of that college game where he just runs up the floor, spot up, bam.
Yeah, he's a mismatch. He is a walking mismatch. Problem with him is because he has control of his contract, they owe him $50 million, and he's got the ability to veto trades. He's essentially a free agent because he isn't going anywhere that he doesn't want to go. And so if you're Portland, you're in that same predicament. Yeah, if Carmelo Anthony wants to come to Portland, yeah, we got a conversation. But given the fact that he comes here all year long and gets rained on when he visits, and he looks around, and I'll never forget running into Carmelo in Athens. He was out looking around, going to the clubs in Athens, and he was like, man, the nightlife here, not so good. I don't know if that guy would welcome living in Portland and being in Portland for the same reasons that a lot of other NBA free agents don't love to come to Portland. Punch It Audio is coming up. We're going to talk a lot of draft. 503-417-7575.
Something is about to happen.
BFT.
Now listen up, everyone.
Let's go. The bald-faced truth.
John Canzano.
I gotta say, I love him most of the time. I think he's right on.
He's okay.
John's great.
He's a little unusual.
Live every afternoon, 12 to 3 p.m.
I hate that guy because he just never knows what he's talking about.
I think he does a damn good job.
That's my dude, man. Yeah, I know him, man. I let my mother listen to him.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Here's the website, mypillow.com. That's where you can get the pillow that will change everything for you. And by everything, I mean you're going to get a good night of sleep. You're going to have a pillow that never gets hot. You're going to sleep better, and you're going to go, man, that made a difference. I did it when I got it. Go to MyPillow.com. Use the promo code 750SPORTS. That's 750SPORTS. If you want to get two premium pillows and two go-anywhere pillows at half off, you use that promo code 750SPORTS at MyPillow.com. It's an American-made pillow. You can feel good sleeping on it. You get a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee as well at MyPillow.com. 750 Sports is the promo code. There come occasions in which I need to take a vacation. And for people, I had some people on Twitter who were delighted on Friday and Monday when we did a best of show that aired on the Bald Faced Truth Radio Network. And I want to thank our affiliate down in Eugene, Fox Sports Eugene. That's 95.7 FM and 1050 AM. Shout out to all the listeners listening in Eugene, in the Eugene area. Klamath Falls will be affiliate number two. They are coming on shortly on the network. We're going statewide. But I guess I got a question for you that only you can answer as a listener to this show. Do you enjoy when this radio broadcast does a best of show? It takes an incredible amount of work to pull those best of interviews. And we have great interviews from Mike Leach and Marcus Mariota. And in the coming week, as I take some vacation, you will hear some interviews that range from, some baseball greats like Bobby Richardson to Drew Bledsoe, Ken Griffey Sr., Joe Rudy, Jerry Royce, Marcus Mariota. Some solid interviews that are all interesting, and they're all pulled because there's some relevant, connection. I get some people who say, I don't want a stale interview. I get other people who go, oh my gosh, that was the greatest thing ever. I got a text message while I was in Omaha from a friend of mine who was listening to this radio show on the app from Arizona with a summer baseball team. And he was listening to the Jeff Garcia interview. And he was like, oh, that's a great interview with Jeff Garcia. And he didn't know that, like, that interview was taped several years ago and it was brought back as a best of interview. He just got, man, that was great. I was listening to that. We were all huddled around the radio and we were listening to that and we were streaming it. And I was like, you know what? Some people love that stuff. Other people were upset and they were like, I want fresh content. I want, but here's the bottom line. When I go on vacation, you could put the Pope in this seat and he'd flatline. I don't know what it is about me that you love so much, but if you're a listener to the show, you're coming here to hear what I think, or you're coming here for the opinions, or you're coming here because it's local sports talk that you can't get anywhere else. And there are some people when I'm out who are like, why are you going on vacation? You can't do this. I got a trip to Anaheim coming up. I got a 14-year-old who is important to me, who is a big YouTuber. She loves to go to VidCon. It's the annual YouTube convention. It's in Anaheim. I'm taking her to VidCon for the fourth year, where I will walk around and she will point out YouTube stars that I don't know. Hey, there's a gamer. He's got like 5 million followers. And I'm like, I have no idea who he is. Barbara Walters could walk through the Anaheim Convention Center during this convention. And none of those kids who are YouTubers would know who the hell she was. But if some gamer walks through there, everybody knows who he is, what he does. It's the future, man. If you're a parent, I've said this before. If you're a parent, you should immerse yourself in your kid's world. That's why I do it. I also think it's fascinating to watch her in that element. I also like that I learned some things about YouTube and where it's all going. So it's interesting to me. But the bottom line is, I will not be in this seat every day all summer long. So do you want a guest host in the seat? Do you like the best ofs? Do you like hearing the Marcus Mariota interviews? Did you like hearing Chip Kelly? We played the Chip Kelly interview, I think, on Friday. Chip Kelly was the coordinator then at Oregon. We played that interview. I just think it's an interesting glimpse into Chip Kelly as a coordinator. And I hope you enjoyed it, because I know I go back into the interviews folder all the time, and we've got all the interviews back to the beginning of the show, and I will pull things out that I'm like, oh, that was so good. Man, what a good interview. I'll pull those interviews out, and I will listen to them, and I'll be like, wow, to hear Mark Helfrich in his first ever interview as the Ducks coach, knowing what we know now, knowing that it went sideways, it got off the rails, hearing Chip Kelly as a coordinator, Nick Aliotti, defensive coordinator at Oregon, Mike Riley interview, Rick Riley interview, Frank DeFord, oh, absolute gold. So I love listening to those, but would you rather just have a guest host in the seat? And I guess that's a question only you can answer. Tweet at me, at John Canzano, BFT, or give us a call at 503-417.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio.
Former Oregon Duck Dylan Brooks was on with Justin and Devon. Justin and Devon are on 9 to noon, 102.9 The Game in Portland. Dylan Brooks compared his game to who? Punch it.
I feel like I have like the same skill set as Draymond Green. You know, I feel like I can score a lot better and, you know, can guard and be a mismatch problem. You know, I think that's where the NBA is going. And, you know, it's perfect for me. You know, that's my game. And, you know, I feel like my game is, you know, like Draymond Green's.
I think it's a compliment to Dylan Brooks to say he's like Draymond Green. I think it's a little bit of a reach, but I'd give him this. I do think the game has changed to the point where, like, some of us that are trying to say, hey, there's no spot in the NBA for Dylan Brooks, he might just prove us wrong. I just don't think it's going to come as him as a first-round pick in this draft. I think there's too many heads that could possibly roll if things don't go right. And as a result, if you are somebody like Dylan Brooks, the bottom line is you've got to have to fight your way into the league. He's going to have to be in the right situation with the right team. He might have to go to the D League to do it. The one thing that I give Dylan Brooks, and the one thing that we should not overlook, because I think of between Jordan Bell, Tyler Dorsey, and Dylan Brooks, Brooks is the number two prospect in that trio behind Jordan Bell. But here's the thing. The wild card that Dylan Brooks has, he's a competitor. He's a fighter. I like his fire. Will it be enough? We'll find out. Paul George reportedly is available for rent. It's Rent-A-George. He told the Pacers he does not intend to re-sign in Indiana. Zach Lowe and Kevin Arnovitz discussed who the best suitors are. This comes from their podcast, Punch It.
We know that the Portland Trailblazers could probably construct the best deal.
Ooh,
the question is, do they have any confidence that Paul George would stay? Or is it just, hey, Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum, Nurkic, and, I mean, you could win there, you know?
Nope, Portland can't get free agents. Portland can't sign free agents. Neil has said that publicly. We'll never get a big free agent to come here, blah, blah. Like, if you ever could, now is the time, because if you get his bird rights, because, you know, this is Damian Lillard, culture setter, you know, popular amongst his peers. Like, there's something there. I think Portland will try.
They should try. This would be, hey, look, you're not going to get Paul George to come in free agency. But if you can construct a deal that allows you to rent Paul George, and you get to play the role of, hey, Paul, let us entertain you for a season, and let us show you how great it can be here, and you get his ass here in the summer when it's nice, not when it's just raining, and he looks around, he's like, hey, you know what? This is not so bad. Well, now suddenly you're onto something, aren't you? I think it's interesting to dream about and talk about. It's not the long-term solution that Portland's hoping for. But the bottom line is, if you can get Paul George or a player like Paul George, you can get him to come to Portland. Yes. Yes, 2-3 times over. Because the alternative is living in the purgatory that the Blazers currently find themselves in. Ndamukong Suh speaking out. It's what he does. He's with the Dolphins. And he says the Dolphins are not afraid of anybody, let alone the Patriots. Punch it.
We understand New England is at the top of the East right now, and we understand that we need to have certain particular game plans for them as they do for us. So taking that to account, I think one great thing about Miami and this team, we've never been scared of the New England Patriots. Oh. We never will be. So with that being said, when we play them late in the season, we'll be prepared.
Boo! That's what the Patriots say. I'm glad he's not afraid of them. I would like to see somebody dethrone the Patriots. They've had their little fun, haven't they? It's what the NFL does. When you have a league that is designed for parity and you have a team that is still continuing to win at a higher level than anybody else, you got a target on their back. I love that Ndamukong Suh is not afraid of the Patriots. I'm an Ndamukong Suh guy. We had him on the show one time, and it was not what I expected. I think the guy gets a bad rap by his own doing, but I think he gets a bad rap because I think people expect that the football player that he is on the field, that that's how he's going to be off the field. I just don't know how we expect a guy to bash people's heads in and knock over the offensive linemen and tackle the running backs. How we expect that guy to be like polite afterward? That's problematic. Beavers baseball. In Omaha, KJ Harrison. Bases were jammed, jacked, and loaded. Mike Parker on the call. Punch it.
KJ Harrison at the plate is grounded into a double play, struck out and walked. Newman delivers. KJ, a drive toward the alley in left center field. This one, it's on its way. So long! A grand slam homer for KJ Harrison! A grand slam in Omaha for KJ! And the Beavers lead it 8-0.
Beaver Nation celebrates KJ Harrison's big, big hit. I wanted so badly to play like the natural with that, because that's what it needed. It needed like, it just needed a little setup, didn't it? If you're a Beaver fan and you're looking at like, hey, Mike Parker on the call, KJ Harrison at the plate. How about a little bit of this?
KJ Harrison at the plate is rounded into a double play, struck out and walked. Newman delivers. KJ, a drive toward the alley in left center field. This one, it's on its way. So long! A grand slam homer for KJ Harrison! A grand slam in Omaha for KJ! And the Beavers lead it 8-0.
Pretty good. I got chills. I'm just saying. We could play that music to almost anything and it would work. You know, like you could take a Blazers play-by-play call. You can get rid of that bed of music. I think we have too many things going on. You're doing a good job mixing today. But yeah, I think you could take almost any call that it was a play-by-play call, and you could say, hey, the natural would work with it, wouldn't it?
Batum to Lillard for three on the win. Got it! He got it! And the Beavers win! 99-99! The Rockets season ends on Lillard's dagger three at the buzzer.
Lillard for the win.
Yes! And the Trailblazers!
Brandon's open three-pointer near side. Ring it up!
Roy dribbling left, pulls up with an elbow jumper right through. He hits the first of his attempts on this evening. Roy hits the first of two. Roy hits a pair. Brandon with eight. Brandon drives into a crowd. Down the lane. Put it in and it's fouled! And Roy converts. He's 4-4 from the line. Roy against Hill. The left elbow pull-up right through. 13 points. Roy takes the jumper over Barnes and Camden. Roy Brandon is just in another zone right now. 15 points. Roy streaking it on Nash and he lays it in! Roy with 17. Brandon ducks it! Roy hit the first free throw. Roy hits another free throw. Roy hits a pair. Now he's back at the line for two more. Roy hits a pair. Now to Roy. Three-pointer out of the key. Roy up to three-point shot, got another one. And Brandon Roll right now is in another zone. It's his fourth 30-point game in the last five outings. Three-pointer under duress, and he hit it! Oh, the natural reigns in a three with two hands in his face. Brandon to the hoop, lays it in, and it's balls! Brandon, do it! Satisfied, and Roy connects on the three-point play. 36 point, crowd chanting MVP, and why not? Roy connects on a pair. 38 points. He hits the first free throw. 40 points with the second. Pulls up a three-pointer. Got it. The natural with 43. That one also good. How about 45 points for Roy? A pull-up jumper. Got it. The natural with 47. To Roy, three-pointer for the lead. Yeah. Dancing in the aisles here at the Rose Garden. And Roy's first foul shot is perfect, and he hits a pair. Timeout, Phoenix.
I'm just saying, like, you could put the natural to yourself brushing your teeth, that bed of music, it would work. Gliss, you were on your feet down there. Finally got your attention on today's show. Little Brandon Roy does that for you.
Yeah, that was good. I was in the building that night. It was good times.
What was that? What do you remember from being there?
Oh, just... It was one of those games where you just kind of felt the buildup when a guy gets going like that. It's every time he touches the ball, you want to see if he can do it again. So that was the main takeaway, is you could feel the anticipation every time he got the ball.
We've got Tyler Dorsey and Jordan Bell coming on. Anybody else coming on today we need to know about?
Supposedly, so we were going to have Dorsey at 1:30. He's actually going to move to 2:30. And okay. In the next segment, we are hoping to have Danny Glover call into the show.
Excellent. Danny Glover coming up. This is do I have to have Mel Gibson questions for him, or he's promoting a big thing? It's called An Evening with Danny Glover. What is an evening like with Danny Glover?
I'm not quite sure. You're going to have to ask him.
I will ask Danny Glover what's that about.
I believe it's some kind of auction.
Interesting. It's a dinner and an auction, and Danny Glover's going to be there, so... We're going to check that out. Tyler Dorsey, Jordan Bell, Danny Glover. Plus, we got a giveaway. What are we giving away with this Applebee's thing? Should we do that now or should we do it later?
We can do it now or later. I got four $25 gift cards to give away to Applebee's.
That's pretty nice.
Yeah. So $25. I mean, that's one or two meals or one or two entrees right there probably. So.
All right. So go ahead and get that done if you want caller number 3456 at 417-7575. You get a gift card to Applebee's just because you listen to the show. You'll want to leave it here as Danny Glover's coming up. Also, if you are somebody who is interested in the MyPillow offer, go to MyPillow.com and use the promo code 750SPORTS. That's MyPillow.com, promo code 750SPORTS for an American-made pillow that is a great pillow. It will never get hot on you. That's the big beef that everybody has, right? Oh, the pillow gets hot. Oh, the backside of the pillow. Oh, you're as cool as the other side of the pillow. You know what I'm talking about. So if you are somebody who is interested in this pillow, use the promo code 750SPORTS. You get 50% off two go-anywhere pillows and two premium pillows. That's half off for being a BFT listener by using the promo code 750SPORTS. So check that out in at MyPillow.com. All right, Tyler Dorsey, Jordan Bell in front of us. But before that, Danny Glover is going to explain to us what an evening with Danny Glover is like, as the actor will be coming on the show to talk about a benefit that he has going on in the Portland area that will benefit children and students with dyslexia. So Danny Glover going to be talking about his movies. And what kind of sports fan is he? Who does he root for? I know he's a Bay Area guy. Does he root for the Warriors or not? Tyler Dorsey, Jordan Bell, Danny Glover. All of those guys are in front of us. You want to leave it here. You've got the Bald Faced Truth radio show.
Here's John Canzano with the Bald Faced Truth.
Pat Casey was really good yesterday after the Oregon State win over LSU. He was feeling it.
These guys, we just talked before the game about, you know, this is our time, this is our opportunity, this is what we came here for. Let's not miss that moment. So, You know, the guys played great.
I was around them right before the game. They were watching the Florida State, Cal State Fullerton game finish. And they were just kicking back. They were in their clubhouse. They were watching on TV. You know, it was just like college kids hanging out. And they're very quiet, this group. That's why I say they're Casey bots. They're very robotic. They're very locked in. And as you have heard on this station, Pat Casey believes that there's something different about this team.
Those guys just—I don't know—there's something about them. So they make you look good when you win games, and they put in a lot of work, and now they're enjoying what they've done.
He went on to say that you know, he thinks that they have done the work. Now they're at the zoo today, by the way, in Omaha. And it's funny because it's not that they don't have personality. There's definitely personality on the team. It's just that they really look to Pat Casey for their cues. It was interesting to me because of the Luke Heimlich stuff that has been dominating the news cycle for the last couple weeks. I wondered, traveling from Portland to Omaha and walking into a setting and interviewing these players, you know, were the players going to be mad at me for my opinions on Luke Heimlich? Was I going to have a bunch of discussions? And as I was flying out of PDX on, what was it, Friday? I ran into some Morgan State boosters who were fired up. For whatever reason, the Luke Heimlich thing is, it absolutely splintered the public. In that there were people who could see it for the troubling and disturbing offense that it was. There were other people who saw a second chance for Heimlich. I don't want to rehash all that. But what really surprised me was how it really cut across the rooting interests of the Oregon Duck fans and the Beaver fans. And the Beaver fans had long pointed a finger at Duck fans and said, "You're the worst fans in the Pac-12. You guys look the other way. Winning is all that matters to you guys." And suddenly, for just maybe a moment or a couple of weeks, the Duck fans were doing that back to the Beaver fan. And I don't know if the Beaver fan wasn't a little bit blinded, or a lot blinded in some cases, to what was happening. Now that this team has proven that it is bigger than any one player, that it's deep enough to win this thing, I wondered, walking into that clubhouse, and I was going to walk in there. I made a point of walking in there after their first game, walking in there in the clubhouse. "I'm right here. Anybody want to talk about it? We'll talk about it." And I thought it was interesting. The players really looked to Pat Casey for their cues. And Casey's just too good a person and too respectful a person to show anything more than respect for other people. He is a good, good guy. And Casey, of course, treated the media with respect and dignity, and his players immediately followed suit. I thought that was an interesting distinction, because I just wondered, like, you never know. I've been around teams where if you wrote critically of them, they were jawing at you. And that's fine if that's what you want to do. I've had great discussions and conversations over the years, but that's why I think it's important, when you are critical of a team, publicly, on a radio show, whatever, it is important to walk back in there the next day, or to walk back in there the next week, or in my case, to follow them to Omaha and say, "I'm here. It's my opinion. Doesn't mean I don't like you guys. But my opinion was that the program shouldn't have a registered sex offender pitching for it." And then this was a distinction that the people in Nebraska made. I was told in the press box at TD Ameritrade Park that if Oregon State had suited up Luke Heimlich, there would have not only been protests around the stadium, outside, a lot of the discussion in the post game would have been about it. There also would have been a requirement legally that Luke Heimlich register as a sex offender in the state of Nebraska. How about that? Because this tournament goes on so long, law would have required a participant in this tournament who was staying in the state of Nebraska to register. So, yeah, the distraction went away, but let's give credit to Pat Casey, his assistant Pat Bailey, the players on this team who are just like, they're robots, man. I was down around that dugout before the game on yesterday. Gosh, it feels so long ago. Yesterday's game. I was down around the dugout in the pregame. They're very loose. When it comes time to play this game, they play as a together. They've got a game plan. They play smart. And this is a very young team. And I got to tell you, if you're not paying attention to Oregon State baseball year-round, get tuned in for the College World Series on Friday. They have stars. Adley Rutschman, the catcher at Oregon State, is going to be a star. He's Buster Posey waiting. Offensively, all he's waiting for is to put that together. Defensively, he is a nightmare for other teams. He is a good athlete behind the plate there. Great arm, good athlete. And it's been said, if you're good up the middle in baseball, you can beat anybody. They're good up the middle. They've got pitching. They've got a catcher who can play. They're good at shortstop and second base. And their center fielder's good. And 1-9 in the lineup, they give you problems. They had 12 walks. LSU brought in their closer in the sixth inning. LSU's coach was trying to, like, hey, what can I do to shut these guys down? He went to the bullpen, not just to the bullpen, to his closer in the sixth inning. He brings in his closer, who had given up 2 runs in 25 and a third innings to that point of the season. All he throws are fastballs in the 90s. He brings in his closer thinking, I'm going to get strikeouts here, get out of this thing, let's get into the seventh inning, and, you know, let's move along. The closer that had given up 2 earned runs in 25 and a third innings gave up 5 earned runs to Oregon State. 5. They put a 5 spot on him. They broke LSU yesterday. LSU is broken. And everybody's looking at, oh, the SEC and the broadcasters on ESPN should be ashamed of themselves. Because if that broadcast was propaganda, like many of you are saying it was, that it was a real disservice to a team that is 56-4. They are on a 23-game winning streak, the second time this season they've won 23 in a row. They are also sitting with the lowest earned run average in 40 years in college baseball. And they will have the highest win percentage of any champion ever in Omaha if they win the thing. And people are talking in Omaha about whether or not Oregon State is the greatest college baseball team ever. So, yeah, if you haven't watched this point, it's not a bandwagon thing. I don't expect everybody to be tuned in to Oregon State baseball year-round. And I don't expect everybody to be tuned in to, you know, Oregon women's basketball year-round. You don't have to do those things year-round. You're not going to get any grief from me because I don't do them year-round. But if you are somebody who appreciates a great team or a great athlete doing great things, pay attention to what Oregon State baseball is doing. It's phenomenal. It's unbelievable. It's unheard of. And the look on the face of the LSU coach and the Florida State coach and the Cal State Fullerton coach as Oregon State is in their side of the bracket, and TCU, Mississippi State over on the other side, everybody's looking at Oregon State and they're going, man, that's a really good team. They're complete. They're deep. They're dangerous. And they put so much pressure on people. It's just absolute pressure. Because if you don't play perfect against Oregon State, if you give them more than 3 outs in an inning, if you walk them, if you don't throw strikes, they make you pay. So keep an eye on that. And look, I will be the first to say if something interesting is going on, you should pay attention to it. And something interesting is going on. Now, to our next guest, who is called in. An Evening with Danny Glover is coming up on Thursday, 5:30 to 9 o'clock at Park Academy in Lake Oswego. Danny Glover is the star of the show, and he joins us now. How are you, sir?
All right. How are you doing?
Doing well.
Yeah.
What's an Evening with Danny Glover entail?
Well, it's a conversation about many things, since this is a conference around people who have learning challenges or differences, you know. We're going to talk about that, talk about my life, talk a little bit about my career. I'm sure maybe we talk a little bit about Portland, because I lived in Portland for about 4 years in the late 90s, 1999 to about 2003, 2004. So that's what it's going to talk about. We're going to talk about another thing, what I think, how I function, I hope, and try to be the best human being I can be the best citizen I can be, all that. At 70 years old, there's a lot of stuff to talk about.
You can't be 70 years old. There's no way.
I'm 70. Every bit of it.
You obviously have taken on some humanitarian things. This is important to you as well. I can tell. Raising money to help kids with dyslexia is important to you. Once you got yourself in a position as an actor to be, you know, as an actor, as a director, as a producer, to be more impactful, how did that feel to you? Like, what obligation did you feel to help people?
Well, you know, the first thing, I mean, you realize, I'm often not aware that I come out of a strong sense of social activism. I worked in city government for 6.5 years in San Francisco before I became an actor. I worked in the Office of Community Development and Model Cities programs. So issues around education, housing, community development, all those things were issues that were on my plate long before I became an actor. And certainly, I think, in fact, I went to an event in San Francisco, a screening of a film I did in Nigeria last year, and it premiered at the Toronto Film Festival last year. And in the audience, there were people there who'd known me longer than 50 years. You know, men and women who remember me as a student. And since it was in a traditional black community in San Francisco, a community that has since been, over the last 50 years, been gentrified, they knew me when those moments when I used to come to meetings at 20 years old. And the Western Addition Community Organization meetings. And always had some sort of my fingertip or my pulse was on all those issues. So by the time I was became an actor and became visible and built at the same time while building a career, I could talk about the issues that I think I felt responsible to talk about as a citizen. One of the first things the first words that I remember my third grade teacher talking to me about in the mid-50s was citizenship. And that was at a moment in time when you had the civil rights movement and the extraordinary changes that were happening in the South and in this country. My third grade teacher, and we lived in federal housing projects, my third grade teacher was talking to all these kids about citizenship. So I take very a great deal of pride in being a citizen and the responsibility of being a citizen. And that is not simply just to vote on occasion when there's an election, but to be engaged in issues, whether those issues around education, which something that is something that is extraordinarily important to me, issues around housing, and which is important to me, and living in a city where it's becoming virtually impossible for working people to live, San Francisco, and I'd imagine some of the same things are happening in Portland as well.
Danny Glover is with us.
Yeah.
Danny, let me promote this thing for you. An evening with Danny Glover is coming up Thursday, 5:30 to 9 o'clock at Park Academy in Lake Oswego. You can go to parkacademy.org for information on that, on how to how to take part of this and help Danny benefit students with dyslexia. Everybody remembers you as Roger Murtaugh in Lethal Weapon. Is that the one that people most often come up to you about and say, "Hey, Danny, do Murtaugh"? Or what else do they talk to you about?
Well, you have that famous line, "I'm getting too old for this." Dot 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 dot. You know what I'm saying? So you have that iconic line and some iconic moments. But you know, they either come up to me. It depends upon, you know, they can come up to me and talk about The Color Purple, which people remember me quite. One of the other things that people talk to me about is Predator 2.
Yeah.
Predator 2. So, but generally, the consensus around that people remember is the wonderful, I think, collaboration between myself, Mel Gibson, Richard Donner, the director, and many others, Joe Pesci, Rene Russo, and the many others who took part in the Lethal Weapon series. You know, so yeah, it's the Lethal Weapon series.
How do you know when you're getting roles what to pass on and what to take, and how much of that is feel? How much of that is trusting agent or other people? Or when did you get good at knowing what to take and what not to do?
Well, I don't know if there's one. You're an actor. You know, some people may have some fault with you playing a role where they don't like you in a role. I played a switch killer. I mean, a serial killer and switchback. I played a role in Shooter with Mark Wahlberg that people say, "Well, we didn't like you in that role." And, you know, you were a bad guy. Sometimes people say that. Yet, I've been fortunate enough to be able to say that I don't apologize for anything that I take. I think when I take the role, because of the story first, and often because of the character, that it is the best thing I can do. It's the thing I want to do, the thing that interests me. You know, for instance, you know, sometimes you have to take a role because you do have to pay bills, and I'm an actor. But I just, excuse me, I just don't take roles based upon that. Yeah.
Danny Glover.
And pretty much that has been the case throughout my career. You know, I've had the opportunity to have a wonderful opportunity to play some wonderful roles in some wonderful movies.
You doing everything that you want to do now, or would you rather, at age 70, do you want to produce, do you want to direct more, do you want to be, political office, the things that you have interested you, are you getting enough out of that, or what's next for you?
Well, I think to carry on, I mean, I still have a passion for acting. I have an opportunity to produce many things. I have a company called Louverture Films, Louverture, Louverture Films, that we do incredible work. We had a couple of films that received numerous awards. We have a film out now that will be released on award. There's an award period called Strong Island, a documentary. We do documentaries. We do features. I've done films in Africa. We've done films in Latin America that we produce. We produce films, documentaries. And some of your audience might have heard of, you know, such as Trouble the Water about Katrina a few years ago, 10 years ago, or Black Power Mixtape, the house I live in, about the war on drugs, many, many, many films. Climate change, this changes everything. Book written by Naomi Klein. We were producers on the documentary of that book. So, I mean, I still produce and still part of that. I'm also still do the work that I do as an actor. You know, I just finished a film with Robert Redford. It's probably one of his last films called The Old Man and the Gun. I did a movie Several movies. I still work. I did a movie that came out last year called Almost Christmas. Beautiful, lovely little story.
Danny, let me give the info again for people. People are blowing me up wanting to know about it. In the Evening with Danny Glover, Thursday, 5:30 to 9 o'clock at Park Academy. We got to get to a commercial break, Danny, but for people who are interested, parkacademy.org. Danny, thank you.
You're welcome.
There's
right now.
Danny Glover. Check him out Thursday.
I want you all to listen up. This is important stuff, all right?
Okay. Here we go.
The Bald-Faced Truth.
Call 503-417-7575 or 877-733-0750 or text to 64636.
Here we go in 3, 2.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a Bald-Faced Truth.
John's waterproofing. BetterCrawlSpaces.com. That's the website you need to know to get to John's waterproofing. If you have standing water underneath your house, you got a problem. But if you can smell mildew, musty smell, earthy smell, have John's waterproofing come out and make sure that you are protecting your investment in your home. BetterCrawlSpaces.com is the website that you need to know about. John's Waterproofing has been doing it in the Portland metropolitan area for a long time, also down in Eugene, Salem, all over the place, Vancouver. They go wall to wall for you. Love the interview with Danny Glover, who was on the show. If you remember Murtaugh from Lethal Weapon, Danny Glover, accomplished actor. He's going to be here in Portland. Love that he popped on this radio show. Jordan Bell, our next guest. When I last saw Jordan Bell, he was leaving the court at University of Phoenix Stadium. He had his hands over his head, and I'll tell you what, I got a lot of respect for what Jordan Bell did in the postseason and in his career at Oregon, but he's got a lot in front of him, and he joins us now with the draft coming ahead. Where are you right now, Jordan Bell?
Right now I'm back home in Long Beach, California.
What's this time been like for you as you wait to find out what's happening next for you?
It's been a whole bunch of like mixed emotions, you know. Nervous, nerve-wracking, excitement, happy, sad, being tired, exhausted, like just a whole bunch of things all put into one.
Is that how you thought it would be, or is it different, this whole process, as you kind of prepare and train and work out?
No, I thought it would be, I mean, like, when you're, like, outside looking in, like, you don't see, like, the little things, like, being on a flight every other day. Being new city, different time zone, you're not focused on that stuff. You just worry about the workouts and then getting drafted. Like, that's all you think it is, but it's so much more than that.
The workouts that you had, what's the difference for you when you have a great workout or maybe where you walk away going, man, I didn't have my best workout? What's the difference between that?
To me personally, I think when I'm the best, I'm showing who I am the best. Like, I'm the best defender, energy guy on the floor. Guarding oppositions, people not scoring on me. I think that's when I'm at my best. I think sometimes I come up with the mindset of like, because it's like when you work out, all you work on is offense, really. Like,
yeah,
you do like sliding drills, but like mostly everything you do is offensively. So I come in just like, oh, I'm gonna get him up today. And like I'll make a lot of shots. Like, it was one workout, like, I didn't miss a shot, but like I still didn't have a good workout because I didn't defend well. I wasn't who I should have been, so that's how I define my workouts.
Jordan Bell is with us, NBA draft in front of him. You obviously saw him in the postseason, the Final Four with the Ducks. What part of your game, or I guess what happens in run up to the draft is people are going to nitpick you. It happens in every sport.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to say, "Oh,
yeah.
Jordan Bell can't play on the offensive end. His game wasn't polished." Whatever. What's the one thing you're sick and tired of people saying about Jordan Bell?
Probably the undersized thing, but I'm too short for my position, whatever that is.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's the one thing that I'm just like, I've proven like time and time again, like, that doesn't matter.
Yeah, and I think too that the NBA game is changing. It's coming to you,
exactly,
isn't it?
Exactly, yeah. Like, centers aren't a thing anymore, really. Like, people who do what I do, my size, they can move like the way I move, or like that's what the league is becoming. So I'm like, I guess people aren't used to it still yet. Like they're still adapting to like the way the league is going now. So I guess I have to just live with it until then.
Jordan Bell is with us. The Blazers, a lot of Blazer fans tweet at me, call into the show saying they should pick you. I said off the top, I said you'd be really interesting in the first round for the Blazers because you're not a guy who needs the ball in your hands all the time, and you're a guy who can defend, and you're athletic. And how did that workout with the Blazers go?
The workout went really well. Definitely one of my best workouts. Defended really well offensively, was knocking down shots, getting dunks, going by my man. So definitely one of my best workouts.
It's hard because you get sucked up into hearing what people say, but what about your agent and the people that are close to you? Where are they managing your expectations?
Right now, between 18 and 31, I don't see myself falling past anywhere past them, just from what teams have told us.
There was a lot of pressure, I think, from fans for you guys all to come back because everybody enjoyed watching you guys play. Was that a hard decision, or at the end of it, is it just, look, I've done what I've come to do in college and it's time for me to go be a professional?
Yeah, I mean, like, my dream was never to play, like, college basketball. It was always to be in the NBA. Like, that's your ultimate goal. So it was the only thing, I think, like, that really, like, held me back from, like, really just, like, immediately just like announcing I was leaving was the fact that we lost the way we lost, and like I took so much responsibility for it. So I think that was the one thing I was like, I wanted to like prove myself like next year, like kind of like what North Carolina did this year from last year's defeat.
Yeah, I saw you come off the court that night and I thought to myself, like, it was heart-wrenching. And you know what? You've probably heard this from people. You had nothing to be ashamed of, man. You played so well, they would not have been in that position without you. And those were some big bodies that you were dealing with in that semifinal.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, just the way I play, I definitely have to take responsibility for that.
Jordan Bell is with us. Have you spent much time with Dylan Brooks or Tyler Dorsey? Because everybody likes to lump you guys together, and I just wonder when you make that decision, you all go separate ways, don't you?
We haven't spent like personal time together. Like, we still all talk, like we're still very active in the group chat that we have with all the team from last year, so we all still talk to each other. We don't see each other obviously because we're working out in different areas. Like, Tyler's in Vegas, Dylan's New York, I was in LA, so like seeing each other, like, we all seen Dylan and Tyler and want to work out each, but you know, we don't hang out as much like obviously like we used to.
Yeah, I think you know, everybody kind of thinks of it that way. Where will you watch the draft? How will you watch it?
I'm having a draft party in Calabasas.
And it's tough because who did you grow up rooting for? Who was your team?
You're not going to believe me, but I was a Warriors fan.
I believe you. I was too, but they were bad. Yeah. They were bad.
Yeah, exactly. I like them when they were bad. Like, I kind of don't like them anymore because they're so good.
That's what I was saying. It's not comfortable for me because I just I remember them losing, and now everybody's a Warriors fan.
Yeah, like everybody. I'm like, you could have named one person on the team like 4 years ago, 5 years ago.
I remember when they had like Chris Gatling and Mills, and they were not good. And then
like the we believe we can win, like the Dallas Mavericks, ACB. I remember that. That's what I remember from them.
Yeah, and now it's. I look at the NBA and I go, okay, now they're too good and they've had their time. So I want, you know, another team.
I want another team to root for.
When you dreamt about being an NBA player as a kid, did you see yourself as a Warrior or did you just dream about playing in the league?
I used to want to be a football player. So my dream was being an NFL. Like as a kid growing up, it wasn't really basketball.
That's so interesting. Were you a Niners fan?
No, I was whatever my stepdad liked, I liked. So I was a Raiders fan, then somewhat a 49ers fan, then a Rams fan, and then I think when I finally took the team for myself, I'm dedicated to the Cowboys.
Jordan Bell is with us. How good is Oregon going to be without you guys? What should the expectation be for next year?
I don't see why they wouldn't win the Pac-12 again this year. I mean, to me, it's going to be just like it was my freshman year. Like, a lot of guys departed, a lot of new guys. You have to just put the pieces together. But I think the talent they have this year coming up is kind of a little bit better than the talent we had my freshman year.
Yeah, it's interesting because Troy Brown should be a player. What about Peyton Pritchard? Yeah. What about Peyton Pritchard? What made him good?
Peyton, he just loves the team so well, and it's, obviously his handle is spectacular. But he was a leader. His confidence too. He brought so much confidence to the table. And like when you have your freshman point guard bringing that, like obviously that makes you bring it up even more. So me being a captain, like I never had to worry about Peyton like. With his confidence or like him breaking down middle of the game at all.
Yeah, I wonder like where he'll be 2 or 3 years from now as a player, because I look back at you and the growth that you had. When did you take your what was your biggest leap forward?
I think going into my sophomore year, like right before I got hurt, I think that's where I really made like the biggest jump. As far as like skill and development, things like that, and in such a short time before I got hurt. So that was definitely the big jump I made. And then I think once I did that, that's when I started like really putting like way more hours in the gym, dedicating myself like to the weight room, like understanding like basketball, like, the full game, studying it more. And I think that's when like I really like it really like put in my mind that like, I can be an NBA player.
I think you strike me as the kind of guy where, like, if you set a goal and you focus on it, you get after it, because you've done that to this draft point. Now the next step is somebody's going to pick you and you're going to get to work figuring out, all right, now how do I get minutes? How do I matter for this team?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, I'm excited for that. I'm excited to, like, start the whole process over again, like, coming into Oregon where, like, I remember we used to have open gym. Like, I used to get picked last every single time. So I'm looking forward to, like, starting the whole clock over again.
All right. We wish you the best. I do see you. I think you'd look good in a Blazers uniform.
I think so, too, honestly.
Yeah. I just think there's a lot of people, given that they have three picks and given that at your position, they don't have a guy like you.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Jordan Bell, we'll have you back on after you get drafted, but congratulations on what you've done to this point. I know a lot of people out there in Eugene who are listening. The show broadcasts statewide, so people across the state are rooting for you and appreciative of what you did.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
All right. There's Jordan Bell, former Oregon Duck, and a guy who he had nothing to be ashamed of at the end of that NCAA tournament. He left the arena crying. And I always... like, I like to see and take you guys, listeners and readers, I like to take you somewhere that you can't go without, you know, like you weren't there, most of you, at University of Phoenix Stadium, and you certainly weren't behind the scenes. So I view my responsibility, if I have a media credential, not to sit on press row and eat popcorn. You know, I'm not saying I don't ever eat popcorn, because somebody will be like, hey, yeah, I saw you had popcorn. Look, what I'm saying is, at crunch time of that game with North Carolina, I made a decision in the final minutes. I was either going to stay out onto the court where I could watch the last seconds and the free throws and all that from 50 yards away in my press seat, or I was going to position myself in the area in which the Ducks and the Tar Heels were leaving the court. Because a lot of times by the time you get these players in the news conference, you don't get the real reaction. You don't get the authenticity that you get from a player who is immediately leaving the court in either the thrill of victory or the agony of defeat or something in between. And so I often will grab that opportunity to say, look, I can sit in my seat here, or I can go where the Ducks and the Tar Heels are going to leave the court. So I went down to the area where they would have stepped down from the court and left the court. So immediately after it went sideways for Oregon with the missed free throws, and, you know, here was Kennedy Meeks' big body getting the offensive rebound, and, you know, Oregon was right there. And certainly the way Gonzaga played in the title game, I think an Oregon-Gonzaga title game would have been a better game. But Oregon was right there with a chance to beat North Carolina, knock them out of this tournament, and play for the national championship. And Jordan Bell didn't get the rebound. And as the players came through, of course Carolina's players were celebrating. But I will never forget Jordan Bell with his hands on his head, wailing. Like, that was real. And a lot of times in sports, and forgive me, the NBA in particular, you get athletes who don't care, aren't emotionally invested, disinterested in the things that fans are interested in, and play so many damn games that you wonder, like, at what point they all start to look the same to the players. That's why the playoffs are so different, because it means something, and the regular season doesn't. But here was Oregon and Jordan Bell coming off the court, and Jordan Bell was crying. And I thought to myself, that guy cares. He cares so much. And then after the game, he's apologizing like it was him who lost it. And forgive me, like, but I watched and I was with that team every step of the way. I was in Sacramento. I was in Kansas City. I saw them play every game. I saw them at practices. I talked to Jordan Bell on numerous occasions. They were not going to be in that position without Jordan Bell. They would have lost in Sacramento without Jordan Bell. Dylan Brooks, he was up and down, never really had one of those takeover games in the tournament. Tyler Dorsey was red hot, shooting the basketball especially, caught fire. And a lot of people say Dorsey won that game for them in Sacramento. That was a dicey game against Dan Hurley's team. But Rhode Island. But Jordan Bell, if Jordan Bell doesn't play the way he played in the tournament, there's no way Oregon gets to the Final Four. There's no way they're in position to, hey, if they can grab that offensive rebound, they're going to get a shot here to win this game. And I will often say that teams and programs need to sniff around it, meaning the championship, before they break through. Like, you know, Coastal Carolina last year winning the College World Series was an aberration. I think you need to sniff around it a little bit. Fullerton State has lost 9 straight College World Series games, but they've got guys who have that experience. Won't be surprised if Fullerton State breaks through in the next year or two. Oregon State, you got to sniff around it. They were there in 05, lost 2 straight. Good night. Then they break through in back-to-back years. So, yeah, you've got to sniff around it a little bit. And I think Oregon, it was just a little too soon. Just a little too soon. They got to the Elite Eight and Buddy Hield, but Jordan Bell, as he is projecting himself 18-31 in the draft, I'm not really feeling him at anything in the teens. But for the Blazers at 26, he's really interesting. And they've, as I look at draft picks in the high 20s over the years, there are players not as good as Jordan Bell who are picked. He is undersized, sure. Is he a center? Is he a forward? He's not a great outside shooter. Sure, I agree with that too. In today's game, maybe that hurts him. But here's the other thing. In today's game, you've got a bunch of guys that are 6'7", who can run, who are great athletes, who can defend. Look out. You got a player who is a role player in the NBA who could have a nice career. I think he's a kind of guy that can have a nice career playing, you know, double-digit minutes in the NBA. So is he a first-round pick? I think he is. Are there two here? I don't really see two. But Tyler Dorsey's going to make a case for himself as a first-round pick next. Is he going to play in Europe if it doesn't work out in the NBA? We'll talk to Dorsey about that. Plus, I'll ask him what questions he's tired of answering. Mattress Firm has got the 4th of July sale. It's on early right now. Go to mattressfirm.com to find a location near you, or just get yourself out to the nearest Mattress Firm location. A good night of sleep is important. I know this. I flew out of Omaha, stayed in hotels. It's not the same night of sleep that I get at home because I've got a mattress from Mattress Firm at my house. I need to get the hotels to start using Mattress Firm. Mattress Firm has the sleep experts. They can help you sleep happy, and they can save you money. That's why you go to Mattress Firm. So get yourself out to the nearest Mattress Firm location and take care of your sleep needs. Plus, save up to $500 off of a great mattress. Mattress Firm is where you save money and you sleep happy. All right, Tyler Dorsey's coming up. Former Duck basketball player, NBA prospect. Where does he see himself? Jordan Bell said 18 to 31. How about Tyler Dorsey? Does he see himself as a first-round pick? And what is the knock that you get on Dorsey if, you know, that he's tired of hearing about? Because Jordan Bell said he's tired of hearing that he's undersized. Tyler Dorsey, is he tired of hearing that he can't create his own shot? What's that thing that sticks in his craw that keeps getting brought up? And that's what the draft time's about. It's about nitpicking. Tyler Dorsey is next.
More with John Canzano.
I think we need cooler music on this show. I didn't pick most of this music. I'm not saying that I'm cooler than this music, but I might be. Why don't you tweet at me, at John Canzano BFT, and give me a, just give me a one song that we should use as bump music. Why are you laughing, Curtis Rogers?
It's just such a wild song. I had no idea it was coming either. When I play these songs, yeah. I have no idea what's coming next.
You know, I hate when we have a really cool person on and then the music's not.
Yeah, we got a pretty cool one coming up. Right
yeah,
now.
And so like I bring Tyler Dorsey on and he's like, wow, how old are you as he comes on? How are you, man?
I'm doing pretty good.
Give me a song that I should play every time Tyler Dorsey comes on the show. What should your intro song be?
I think probably one of a Drake songs.
We have to get a Drake song. I think I might have one in here. Let me take a look and see what I got here. I need a one dance, got a Hennessy. Does that work?
Yeah, that works.
That's cooler than what I played.
Yeah.
Like, how are you doing, man? This is all about to happen, isn't it?
Yeah, it's about to happen in 2 days. Pretty exciting and nerve-wracking at the same time.
I asked Jordan Bell earlier about like the experience and what part of it did he not expect. What about you? Because you hear about all the workouts and everything, but what was it that maybe people don't understand?
I feel like I didn't go into it and I didn't expect anything. It was just mostly of the traveling and sometimes I would forget what city I am because I'm traveling so much because I'm only there for a day. But that was just the only thing that surprised me was most of the traveling and only days rest between and knowing how to figure it out mentally and physically because it could wear on you because I did about 14 of them.
How do you do your best effort physically when you're tired like that?
I'm fighting through fatigue. It's just more mental. And I think as more workouts came on, I figured it out. And it's just being in the best shape beforehand going into these workouts. And I think that pays off through these workouts is being mentally prepared and being able to fight fatigue, but also knowing how to rest and treat your body on the days you have between.
I hear players like that, they'll always say that, like when they're 10 years into the league, they'll say, I say, what do you know now? And they go, I know how to take care of myself now. I realize, how to take better care of myself. Did you learn any of that at Oregon? Or because the games are so spaced out and you're not traveling as much, is it easier?
I think I was taught at a young age how to treat my body right. So I think I was well prepared even before I came to Oregon. I knew how to take care of my body. So that just came easy to me, I think, because I learned it at a very young age.
What's the knock, because the draft becomes about criticizing how he's too this, he can't create, his first step is, you know, his length. They're giving Dylan Brooks a hard time about the length of his arms. What's the thing you keep hearing that you go, that's just so ridiculous, and I'm not going to hear that?
Yeah, they bring up length a lot, and also how athletic you are. And I feel at the end of the day, it's all about how you perform on the court. I feel like potential and measurements can only take you so far. And there's so many examples in the league now and in the draft before. A lot of players were unexpected because, like, a good example would be Brogdon. Nobody knew he was going to have that year, but he fell back in the second round. But there's a lot of examples in the draft. And to me, none of that matters. It's all about being ready to perform, you know, fulfill your potential, like, early and not taking a long time, because a lot of rookies come in and it takes them a couple years or they never fulfill their potential. But for me, I want to come in and be ready from the jump and not make it as a long of a transition into that, to the NBA game.
When you worked out, where did you think you had your best workout?
My best? I think I had a couple places where I played good. I had 14 of them, so I can't really pick any specific one. I had one, but I did have good workouts with Milwaukee. I feel Philly had good workouts with Boston. I'm just like, six, most of them. All of them didn't go as well, but I think a lot of them did.
We're talking to Tyler Dorsey, former Oregon Duck. How are they going to be without you guys?
To me, I really can't. I don't know. Everybody left, pretty much. That was the core group that was there. And two people transferred as well, so there's going to be a new group coming in, and Coach Allman is going to figure it out. He's a great coach. He always puts it together every year, even when he doesn't have as much talent or people saying there's not a lot of talent there or experience now. So, but he'll definitely put it together, and every year Oregon surprises people, so I don't expect anything different.
It was neat to see during the NCAA tournament your family there sitting so close to the court. I think your sister was there, your mom and dad. Is that right?
Yeah, they were there.
Yeah, and I mean, it was just neat to see. It almost looked like, I mean, you could just tell some families keep a distance, some families are somewhere in between. You could just see on their faces, like, they were proud of the team. They were proud of you. You really stepped up in the postseason. What has your family meant to you in this process?
They mean the world to me. They've been making sacrifices since I was a little kid. Since I started AAU at 5 years old, they've been making sacrifices from their job, taking time away, and traveling with me. And they're my backbone, and they've been with me and want me to accomplish this goal. So as it get closer, they're just as nervous as me, but they're my best supporters.
Where are you going to be on draft day? How will you watch it?
I'm going to just stay home and watch it with family and friends at home.
I think when I look at, you know, here's a process where you guys all kind of go your separate ways. Everybody wants to lump you and Dylan Brooks and Jordan Bell together, but you're all three different players. When you went to college, you obviously were thinking NBA. What age were you when you said, I want to play in the NBA?
I think probably in elementary school, about sixth grade, where I really said I want to, that's my dream, is to make it to the NBA. But as I got older, that I still had that dream and to make that accomplishment. But it's more, I just don't want to make it to the NBA, because people make it and are out the league in 3-4 years. My goal is to become one of the best players in the league and get better every year and have a long career.
their team you rooted for growing up? Were you a Laker fan?
Yeah, I never had a specific team I like. I just watched a lot of players. I did watch the Lakers a lot, though.
What'd you think of the playoffs? Because I look at the Warriors made it boring. I grew up a Warriors fan. I can no longer root for them because they're too good. It's no fun to root for them anymore. And I look at the small market teams and I go, man, what chance do they have?
It's tough. Definitely the Warriors made it tough, I feel. And other teams are going to have to make moves, and everybody's just going to have to add more talent. And the Warriors made it tough. It's already tough in the West. So everybody's going to have to make adjustments. I just feel like that. So for the small market teams, it's drafting the right players and trying to get a free agent maybe. I don't know. There's a lot of good free agents this coming up summer.
Tyler Dorsey is our guest, former Duck, NBA draft ahead here on Thursday. You obviously are at this point where your life's going to change and you're now going to be off doing the next thing. The time at Oregon, how much time can you spend looking back and appreciating what happened at Oregon versus focusing on what's next? Do you have to move forward mentally?
I feel like I have right now moved forward and been focusing on this process and the draft process. And I feel like when I sit back and have time to really look at it, I had an amazing 2 years at Oregon and probably one of the most winning this resume. Because my 2 years, I was at the Elite Eight and then the Final Four the following. So I think I really take those memories and that winning resume with me. And it taught me to learn how to win and with a good team. So I think it was a blessing. But as of right now, I just don't, you know, I'm so focused on the draft process. I'm not really have time to look at that and really focus on what we did and as a team, as a coach.
I asked Tony Stubblefield, your assistant coach there at Oregon, when you know during the tournament, you just started taking over, started making more of the opportunities, whatever it was, you were producing. I asked him what he thought it was, and he just said you had taken it on yourself to step up. Was that intentional, or does that stuff just happen because it presents itself, or why all of a sudden were you scoring 20 a game?
I feel like, yeah, I wanted to step up. And we've been working so hard to get to this point. And March is the most important month for college basketball. It's time for the bright lights to come on and to win. And I just picked up my game. I think all the work ethic and all the extra hours throughout the season, it's definitely going to be ups and downs during the season. But at the time, playoff time or March time, it's time to win. And it's time to perform and just go out there and get it done. And that's what I wanted to do. And there was nothing else to it. It was just me stepping up to the challenge.
All right. We wish you the best. I know there are a lot of people in the state of Oregon who are pulling for you and also Dylan and Jordan as well. But whatever happens next for you, good luck, Tyler.
Appreciate you. Thank you for having me.
All right. Next time you come on, we'll have Drake ready. There's Tyler Dorsey, who deserved a better song. And you're right. Like Curtis Rogers, man, he does a fantastic job running. He's air traffic controller of this show. And the planes would collide if he wasn't here. But you're right. Like, how is that for you as you're like punching stuff up and the songs just come up randomly?
Oh, it'll throw me off. It'll throw me off big time if a song like the one we had coming back comes on and, you know, I'm trying to get folks here and then bam, it's like, oh, well, now I'm gone.
I always feel like we should have better songs and people are saying, guy on Twitter says AC/DC would be well. Just be a little slow roll into the show. Might have to leave the bells out and just get right to the guitar.
Yeah. This is Trevor Hoffman's intro music, I believe.
Yeah. I could come running in.
There we go.
The other thing, right here. See? And you say, You're listening to the Bald Face Truth radio show right there, Liner. What other song? Gliss, you're the producer of the show. What's your what would your intro music be like?
Well, I'm pretty big on AC/DC as well. I think we've talked about this in the past. That's for me, AC/DC and sports go hand in hand.
How about this one for you?
Nah, it's too bouncy.
Yeah?
Nah, I don't know if I could do that one.
You know what song I used to play? We used to do it all the time. This predates anybody who's been around here, but we used to play this song. We'd only use this song in the winter when the weather was crappy. And John Strong, the voice of American soccer, was in the role of air traffic controller. He's now off calling World Cup games, World Cup qualifiers all over the world. But I had gone to Las Vegas, and I had gone to, like the kids do these days, you go out to Las Vegas now, and you don't just stay in the casino, you go out to the pool. And then out at the pool, there was a second pool that had a giant hedge around it, and I could hear, like, splashing and giggles and the screams, like, of delight, you know. And I imagine on the other side of this hedge, in this second pool, that it was going to be like beautiful girls in bikinis, like on the shoulders of guys throwing beach balls back and forth. And the guys were going to have like pitchers of beer in their hand. You know what I mean? It was like the scene in my mind. And lo and behold, I got behind the hedge. And in fact, it was exactly that. It was like people splashing.
It's like a day club, right?
Yeah. But the music that was on is what stuck with me. So I told John Strong, the voice of American soccer, who was then the air traffic controller, the weather outside was dark, right? But I remember that day was blue skies and bikinis and beer, okay? And I said, that song, anytime it plays, takes me right back there immediately. And it's not like a song that I would walk around listening to. It's just like where you associate, like the Blazers horns play, and you associate the Blazers horns are a good feeling for people. Like, it reminds them. Right? Where are you right now?
I think of Bill Shonley when I hear the horns.
Yeah, so when I hear this song, I think of being at Vegas, out by the pool, and I have the scene in my mind. This is what was playing.
I know this one.
And I walked behind that hedge, and I had my wife with me, so don't, you know. And I never forget, like, two girls in their 20s came up to me while I was standing in line getting a drink. And I was like, hey, I still got it, right? Two girls in their 20s come up, and they go, excuse me, we think you and your wife are so cute. How do we find, like, that kind of love? And so I had that conversation with them. They were inebriated. And my wife says, well, what did they want when I came back, you know? And I said, yeah, you know, they're just asking if I'm single. more or less. Curtis Rogers, what's your song?
My song?
Yeah.
Man, I don't know. Yeah, something to get pumped up there. I don't know about 80s rock, but yeah.
What would you what kind of, like, up tempo, what else?
Yeah, something up tempo. Like Tyler Dorsey, maybe some hip hop there.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know if I would have put you down for that.
Yeah, I could do some older hip hop.
Yeah.
But I don't know about the new stuff.
Yeah, I like his choice of Drake. I don't mind Drake.
You don't mind Drake?
No, I don't. No,
I'll give you more Drake. Let's see what else I got. See if I'm. Is this a Drake song? Lakewood means rewind. A gunshot means forward. No,
no, that is not Drake.
That's not Drake. Are you sure? So. I think it is. I think it is Drake. I think I might be cooler than you guys. It is Drake. Let's see. I'll go further in the song.
Oh, that? Yeah, that's
Drake. That's Drake. That's the beginning of the song. See, is Drake clean? Is he safe for air?
Not usually.
Yeah, no.
A little of this, a little of that.
Hit or miss.
Why is Drake? Why is Drake work? Like, why is Drake popular? What is it about Drake?
I think it's because he could sing, and he had kind of a unique sound when he first came around. I'm not a huge Drake fan, but that was kind of my
he sings annoyed to me. Like he's you know, he's like annoyed.
Yeah, I could see that.
Does he sounds like he's like you're standing on my foot or whatever, you know what I mean?
I don't listen to a lot of current hip hop. I like Kendrick Lamar. Please do not play any of it on the radio. Yeah, see, that song doesn't do it for me.
Yeah, that, no.
In fact, that's probably one of his worst songs, if you asked me.
Well, I should have played the other one, because now Tyler Dorsey thinks I'm not that cool. Oh, he played that Drake song. Oh, well. All right, grab a podcast of this radio show by subscribing on SoundCloud and iTunes. We'll figure out what Curtis Rogers' theme song should be. You can tweet at me, at John Canzano BFT. We are going to have best of shows for you the rest of the week. I would encourage you to tune in because, let alone, I'll give you a little preview, on tomorrow's show, you will hear from Ken Griffey and Marcus Mariota on tomorrow's show, plus Joe Rudy and others. So it's the best stuff that we've got. Like, if you've ever missed an interview on the show, you want to be here when I'm out. And the reason why I will be out is I'm under an obligation to go to VidCon in Anaheim. The 14-year-old makes it an annual trip. I go with her, and we're going to take the 3-year-old and the 1-year-old to Disneyland and California Adventure. So I've been training for this moment for weeks now. You know two things about this show. You know it's not here for a long time, just a good time.